I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. One of the more gripping and compelling books of the season is the new book from Sarah Wineman, The Real Lolita, The Kidnapping of Sally Horner, and the Novel That Scandalized the World. It's an investigation of the 1948 abduction of 11-year-old Sally Horner. It was a case that was widely reported at the time, and as Ms. Wineman establishes in the book, was one that Vladimir Nabokov followed and took notes on. Mention of the case makes it into the novel itself, which, when published in 1955, is a huge success. The life of Horner, though, is investigated rigorously by Ms. Wineman, and what emerges is a full picture of Sarah Horner, someone seemingly forgotten and completely overshadowed by the fictional Dolores in the novel. What's to admire in the book is Ms. Wineman's skill at finding legal documents, news stories, as well as mining public records and the interviewing of remaining relatives, both of Sally Horner, as well as Frank LaSalle, the man who abducted and raped Horner on a journey from Camden, New Jersey, to Baltimore, to Dallas, to San Jose, where she is eventually rescued. Sarah Wineman is the editor of Women Crime Writers, 8 suspense novels of the 1940s and 1950s, and Troubled Daughters, Twisted Wives. She covers book publishing for Publishers Marketplace, and has written for sundry publications, including the New York Times, the Washington Post, the New Republic, the National Post, the Globe and Mail, Maclean's, and Hazlitt, where a story on Horner she wrote first appeared. She is from Ottawa and a graduate of McGill and the John Jay College of Criminal Justice's Forensic Science Graduate Program. She lives in New York, where she joined me from last week. Visit sarahwineman.com. This new book is published by Knopf. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Sarah Wineman. Ms. Wineman, good morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. The importance of Sally Horner today, I'm reading the book and I'm thinking that this was almost necessary for you to say redeem her again or reclaim her from the way she's been perceived by readers of Lolita, as well as people in general. I mean, her story has been forgotten, and I can't say how what a good feeling I got reading the book, because I got to know her a little bit better.
And that's precisely what I set out to do. I mean, Lolita has that fleeting parenthetical reference to Sally Horner's kidnapping when Humbert Humbert, who of course is the unreliable pedophile narrator of Lolita, late in the novel utters, "Had I done to Dolly," and Dolly of course is Dolores Hayes, whom he nicknames Lolita, "had I done to Dolly what Frank LaSalle, a 50-year-old mechanic, had done to 11-year-old Sally Horner in 1948. And so because there's just so many different illusions and games and tricks and references in Lolita, it's not altogether surprising that the vast majority of readers that either I polled or that have since talked about it with me, that they just, it just completely sailed by and they didn't even notice that there was this reference. And if they had noticed it, maybe they would have thought that this was just some other name that Nabokov made up.
Mm.
But the fact that there was this real girl, there was this real case, and I wanted to know what happened to her, and I wanted to know what kind of life she had, and what happened to her before she was kidnapped, while she was in captivity, and after her rescue. And it felt to me really, I felt so strongly attached to creating this three-dimensional portrait of Sally and show her in as much humanity as the record and what people remembered about her could tell me.
Yeah, even her niece didn't know
exactly
who she was, because I guess the family refrained from talking about her and what happened for all those years, right?
I mean, the custom in the early 50s was that if something terrible happened to you, you didn't talk about it. Think of veterans coming back after World War II, and they never discussed what happened on the battlefield. They never discussed anything, even if they might exhibit what we now consider to be post-traumatic stress disorder. That just wasn't done. You didn't go to therapy to talk about it. So, of course, it makes perfect sense to me that Sally would not have had any psychiatric treatment or had any outlet, really, to discuss what happened or to reckon with it. So instead, you bury it. But because of what happened to her and the fact that she was on this 21-month cross-country nightmare that took her from Camden, New Jersey to Atlantic City to Baltimore to Dallas and then finally to San Jose, where she was ultimately rescued and returned home. But in returning home, she went back to the exact situation that she had been in before she was kidnapped. And so everybody in town knew what had happened to her, but they didn't think of it as Sally was a victim of repeated sexual abuse. They viewed her through the prism of someone who had given up her virginity to someone much older, and that somehow it was the blame lay on her. And so the terminology that we now use for that is slut-shaming. Mm-hmm. In 1950, they didn't have that phrase, but certainly that's basically what happened. And so for Sally, she could never really come to terms with what had happened, and then she didn't have any time because her life was so cruelly and tragically cut short at the age of 15.
You do such magnificent research in the course of the book, and the reader can see this, with the sort of records that you mine. You explore her life, or her birth, the sort of family life she had before the abduction. What's the process that you take in terms of piecing this all together? Because it's not only, as I said, mining archives, but newspapers. Census records also play a big part. Birth certificates. I mean, you also piece LaSalle's life as well.
Or at least I tried to, yeah. Even though the first 40 years of his life were incredibly opaque. But you've sort of hit on most of the resources that I had. So, for example, I would look at newspapers either on microfilm or through databases that I subscribed to, which were incredibly helpful, especially the local papers in Camden and Philadelphia, which had, I think, the richest material related to Sally's kidnapping and rescue and death. And also Ancestry.com was a real marvel. I mean, I just found a lot of records that way. Visiting a lot of archives, I spent a fair amount of time in Trenton, New Jersey, where the state archives are. I went to archives in Philadelphia, in Baltimore, in San Jose. I tried to get material in Dallas as well. So essentially it was a mix of finding documentary evidence and court records wherever possible. And when it wasn't possible, then I would have sensory material from visiting as many places and as many locales as I could, just to kind of get a sense of where Sally would have been at any particular point in her awful journey, and to kind of try to imagine myself in her shoes. So it was, I guess, an empathetic exercise, but I do find visiting locations to be helpful, even if many decades have passed and the actual residences or buildings or places might not necessarily be there anymore.
And in a place like Camden, that's changed a great deal since the 40s, right?
Oh, has it ever. I mean, in 1948, Camden didn't know that it was about to decline, but it had just come off many years of flush economy. There was a relatively healthy manufacturing sector. RCA Victor had their offices there. Campbell Soup did as well. They still had their headquarters there, but now it's much more of a nominal presence, and certainly there's been this post-World War II decline, a changing socioeconomic strata where the largely white middle class fled to the suburbs, and African Americans moved in, and there wasn't the infrastructure to support them in the same ways, and there were housing issues. So certainly by the time I visited Camden, I just found it to be such a profoundly sad place. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily feel like I was in danger, although I wasn't going to stay there after dark. But it just felt like a city that didn't know what to do with itself. And they've had so many decades of problems that it's hard to figure out what is the best way to solve them. Mm-hmm. Certainly, there have been changes in policing and community organizing and the like. But again, I'm not an urban planner and I'm not a sociologist, and I didn't write this book to kind of highlight the problems of Camden, but I did find it interesting that seeing the changes of that city and also commensurate neighborhoods in Baltimore and Dallas, it sort of highlighted the difference between the world that Sally was in and the world that we're in now.
That shooting spree, the Howard UNRRA shooting spree, did that happen?
Yeah.
Did that happen? I guess that happened right after Sally was abducted. Is that correct?
So Sally was taken in June of 48, and Howard UNRRA went on his mass shooting spree in September of 1949.
Mm.
And it was in a different neighborhood. It was in the Kramer Hill, but it was a shooting that I think profoundly affected the city and certainly the country. And, of course, it's terrible that there's just so many more mass shootings now. But the type of personality that UNRRA exhibited and a lot of the forces that helped lead to his crime spree, we see in a lot of more contemporary mass shooters. And so I wanted to include that as a way of showing what the police would have been dealing with while Sally was in captivity and while
right.
she was away,
yeah.
and also why their attention might have been drawn to elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a way of showing that here was this terrible thing that happened that was sort of a symbolic foreshadowing of decline that was to come.
Yeah. So 1948, when Sally Horner is abducted, how much
yes.
of Lolita had Nabokov written at that point?
Probably in fits and starts. He had started talking about this project in and around 1947. Certainly he had exchanges with his eventual frenemy, Edmund Wilson, about it. But it wasn't called Lolita then, and it wouldn't be called Lolita until very late in the process. So at mm-hmm. that point it was still called The Kingdom by the Sea, and she had a different name. I mean, at one point she was Juanita Dark, which Nabokov scholars kind of take to be a refashioning of Jeanne d'Arc or Joan of Arc. And that, in a way, knowing that is also a clue to the fact that she was a heroine, that she was a martyr to Humbert Humbert's evil desires, and that she could sort of transcend the abuse and the trauma that she suffered. But he changed it to Lolita, to Dolores Hayes, and that name is, of course, what the fictional girl is known by.
Mm. And through your research, you found out that he had followed this case, the Horner case, closely, hadn't he?
So we know for sure that he knew of Sally's death because there's a note card in his archives at the Library of Congress that recopies a wire story that ran in the New York Times on August 20th, 1952, about Sally's car accident death. And so to have Sally's name in Nabokov's handwriting, it was really beyond thrilling and strange to encounter it while I was working on the book. But I think there's a good circumstantial case to be made that he had to have been aware of Sally's rescue in March of 50, because it was pretty extensively covered in newspapers, not just in the States, but in Canada, in Britain, even as far away as Australia and New Zealand. I mean, this was an international sensation, and people were really quite captivated by what had happened to Sally and what she had endured and the story of being taken across the country by a kidnapper. I mean, it was unusual, it was rare, but it was also just something that I think a lot of mothers could relate to, of this fear that someone might spirit away their daughters. And so I think there are enough details in Lolita that correspond not just to details that would have been Sally's in newspaper accounts of Sally's death, but also in newspaper accounts about Sally's rescue, which is why I do subscribe to the belief that he pretty likely knew about it. Maybe he wasn't like paying extra special close attention, but it's in that way that if you see something and then you put it in the back of your mind and then it comes up again and it sticks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can kind of relate to that because I don't know when I first read the Times Literary Supplement piece that Alexander Dolanin wrote about Sally Horner and Lolita, but I do know that when I read it in mid to late 2013, that time it stuck, and that's what got me to ask, had anybody reported out Sally Horner's story as a long-form feature, where it wasn't just about a crime story, but it was about reconstructing the life of this girl as best as I knew how. And so sometimes it takes multiple exposures before something really sticks.
There are a number of photos of Sally Horner in the book, and what strikes me, because some of them are taken after her rescue in San Jose, she just comes, we have photos of ourselves and our friends or whatever, but there's something about her photos that just transcends, say, the actual photograph itself. She looks very much alive, and I guess that's her spirit, if you will. I mean, you've talked to close friends of hers, people that knew her. She was someone that you grew to like a great deal. Was she?
I liked her. I admired her. I wished there had been some way to rip the space-time continuum that we could have gotten to know each other, that she could have lived to somehow read of Lolita, because I do think that Lolita would have been published no matter what, mm-hmm. because this idea had been germinating in Nabokov's mind for quite a long time, not just with the novella The Enchanter, but even earlier with that paragraph in The Gift that's essentially a précis of the plot of Lolita. So he'd been thinking about this idea of a middle-aged man's illicit desire for a prepubescent girl for quite a long time. But I do think that knowing about Sally Horner was the impetus for him to finish the book and to sort of bring it back to her. Yes, when Sally's niece Diana showed me this repository of photographs that she had inherited from her late father, Sally's brother-in-law, Al Panaro, mm-hmm. I did feel, looking at her, that she came alive for me in a much greater way than she had before. I mean, there's one picture I keep coming back to, which is the one where she's in dungarees and a black shirt, and she's wearing lipstick, she's holding a newspaper in her hand, and she's coming out of her room, and the photo snaps, and she looks a little startled, like maybe she's sleepy, or maybe she was in the middle of something. And I just, you know, look, photographs lie like anything, but mm-hmm. they also reveal larger truths about people. And it just felt that photo told me a lot more about Sally than any of the newspaper and media coverage. And by the same token, when there was a film clip of her, which on publication day, my publisher put on YouTube, but just being able to see Sally move, mm-hmm. see her interact with her sister and her niece, and to see her, like, move around in the zoo and see how fragile and shy she looked, and to know that this footage was shot within weeks of her rescue, it was so dramatic and so heartbreaking, and I still kind of get chills. I've watched that clip hundreds of times now, mm-hmm. but every time I see it, it just sort of slaps me with a newfound force that this girl lived. She was real. She suffered abuse and trauma, but she also had family and friends who loved her and whom she loved in return. And so that's why I just never want to lose sight that Sally Horner was a human being, and that's how I wanted to present her.
Have you reread Lolita in the course of writing this book, say?
Oh, yes. I mean, I would read it, and I would reread it in fits and starts, and mm-hmm. I have the annotated Lolita that was edited by Alfred Appel to help, because I would have to look at specific references and sort of pull things out that I needed. Right before publication, I did reread it one more recent time, and every time I read Lolita, I find something new and different to take away. And so the most recent thing that I was sort of struck by is the fact that in the introduction, the person who's doing that preference, John Ray Jr., reminds the reader that these are actually pseudonyms. So in fact, her name, Dolores Hayes' name, is actually something else. And it's her last name rhymes with Hayes, but it isn't actually Hayes. Mm-hmm. Humbert is actually somebody else. But we forget that, just as we forget that Dolores was a victim of repeated sexual abuse and trauma, because Humbert's narrative and his style, his fancy prose style, is so seductive and so, it's like sorcery. It pulls the reader into his worldview and his viewpoint. And so we're carried along in the way that he tells this story, in this most dazzling language that Nabokov employs, that it's all too easy to deny or to forget what horror lurks underneath.
Yeah, and with your book now, whether one wants to read Lolita again, you get a much fuller picture, more accurate picture of who Sally was, and she's not no longer relegated to, say, the slut shaming, or just the innuendo that the book might suggest.
She's no longer a footnote. I wanted her to step out from behind this deliberate shadow and no longer be neglected, no longer be erased, and for her story to take precedence, but also be placed in permanent conversation with Lolita. Yeah. I mean, I'm not here to tell people not to read Lolita, because I still will defend it as a brilliant work of art. And I just think that my role in telling Sally's story is to show that artists do have a responsibility when fictionalizing other people's pain to take that into account, and that the real stories matter, and they matter in ways that are equal to, if not greater, than the work of art. And so I really just keep coming back, and I keep stressing how much Sally Horner matters, because in telling this one story of this one little girl, it also illuminates the systemic ways in which people are brought down, they're abused, that they suffer shame and they shouldn't, that they suffer trauma, but they can at least try to get to a point of healing and understanding. And I think opening things up is a lot more useful than trying to have some binary relationship between art and life. I'm a critical thinker, and I want people to think critically.
Yeah. It's also, as you just said, it's a very timely book to read in these times, where a lot of these themes, a lot of the situations that happened to Sally Horner, I mean, are terribly relevant to today, unfortunately.
I fear that this book was always going to be timely, because the repeated rape of a girl is a timeless subject. I mean, the fact that Lolita was published first in 1955 and then officially, properly in the United States and Canada and beyond from 1958 onwards, we've had 60-plus years of trying to reckon with the story that we thought Lolita was telling us and what Nabokov may have intended and what we should actually take away from it. And that's why it's still controversial, and it's still the topic of vociferous discussion, and I think it always will and always should be. So I view The Real Lolita as a timeless but also a timely book, yes. Mm. I did experience some difficulty working on edits, as Me Too was really gearing up as a national hashtag and conversation. But I think that that's also what makes my book so necessary and so needed, that it is part of this larger reckoning with what we thought was okay behavior, which in fact is grossly the opposite.
Now, Vera Nabokov, how did she view the girl herself? I mean, you write in the book that she had, I guess, is it a diary that she had that she wrote about the girl? And I mean, I refer to her as the girl because at this point, yeah, it's either Lolita or Sally Horner, right?
Well, yes. So Vera kept a diary that was an offshoot of the one that Vladimir had kept for most of his life. She took it over right when it was clear to them that Lolita was going to become something of a phenomenon. And I think there was a sense that they wanted to capture it for their own reasons or for posterity. And so not long after it was published, as Lolita began to embark on its weird cultural afterlife, Vera did write this note essentially criticizing the criticism, this idea that they missed the point, that she was this poor heroine and that she deserved to have all the best attention paid to her. I know I'm paraphrasing, mm-hmm, but that was essentially the sentiment that she expressed in private. In public, a few years later, she had a different tack when a reporter who had read an article that connected Sally to Lolita wrote in asking if this was true, and the letter that she wrote back, representing both her and Vladimir, is this remarkable document, because on the one hand it seeks to deny any influence, But she also admits, yes, Sally Horner is referenced in Lolita, but there are other girls that he drew from. And so it's like she denies it, but she doesn't. And you can't get around the fact that Sally Horner is referenced directly in Lolita.
Mm-hmm.
And Nabokov never did anything by accident. He always had some kind of reason for doing things. And so I just, as I say in the book, they were not careless people. There was some method to their madness. And that's what I was just trying to wrestle with and figure out, well, yes, they didn't say outright, and they wouldn't, because that wasn't the way of the Nabokovs to do that when they valued art for art's sake, and Nabokov in particular, I think, kind of enjoyed this idea of having a godlike status. But I prefer to kind of chip away at that edifice and see what was underneath, and again, make it a more complicated story.
I could talk all day with you about this book, because there's so many layers, so many themes, and so many things that I've just wondered about as I'm reading the book. It is such a good book, and it's a fine achievement. Congratulations, and continued good luck with it, Sarah.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to hear that, and I so enjoy talking with you.
The book is called The Real Lolita, The Kidnapping of Sally Horner and the Novel That Scandalized the World. It's published by Knopf. Its author, Sarah Weinman, joined me on the line from New York City in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.